These days, a certain stalwart optimism pervades our culture. When things go wrong, we often hear bromides such as, life never sends something your way you can't handle, or you are always at the point in your life where you were meant to be. These messages appear on greeting cards, in the titles of books, on daytime TV talk shows. It's as if we can't admit that sometimes things are mysterious or just plain creepy. Well, a new collection of short stories by Dan Shaan puts the lie to such sunny sentiments. Called Among the Missing, this set of 12 stories concerns things such as a young widow's fears, a woman's suspicion of her brother-in-law, an imaginative young boy who believes he's visited by a future version of himself. The title story, Among the Missing, opens with this scene.
My mother owned a lakefront cabin not far from where the bodies were discovered. She watched from the back porch when the car was pulled out of the water. She could hear the steady clicking of the big tow chain echoing against the still surface of the lake. Brown-gray water gushed from the windows and trunk and hood as the car rose up. The windows were partway open, and my mother's first thought was that animals were probably in the car also, suckers and carp and catfish and crawdads, scavengers. The white body of the car was streaked with trailing wisps of algae. She turned away as the policemen gathered around.
That's Dan Shaan reading from his short story, Among the Missing. He joins us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Welcome. Hello, Dan Shaan.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I wonder if I've laid it on too thick there by saying the stories are creepy. Do you think they're creepy?
Oh, yeah. Well, I can't help it. But actually, I don't think you laid it on thick. One of the reviews that I got said something like, Dan Shaan is the Rod Serling of emotional weirdness, which maybe that lays it on a little thick, but I thought it was very funny. It's one of my favorite plug lines.
High praise, I would say.
Yeah, sure. Rod Serling, emotional weirdness. That's all of what my stories are about. One of the stories has a woman who's just lost her husband, and she talks over and over about learning how to cope and learning how to go on with her life and being functional. And that idea of being functional in an unfunctional or dysfunctional world is one of the ideas that I'm interested in all of the stories.
That story that you refer to is called Safety Man. And we have this young widow with two daughters. Her husband has just simply up and died. So it's been completely unexpected. And she has one of those blow-up dolls, one of those inflatable male dolls people will remember, I think, from the Spencer catalogs, and I suppose they're still sold.
Oh, yeah, they're in the Sky Mall catalogs.
You could put it anywhere. You could put it in your house.
Put it in your window so that if a burglar is coming, he sees the man sitting in the window.
And I think it's easy for us to laugh at something like that on the one hand, but this woman actually ends up using this inflatable doll to help her get through her life. I mean, it becomes more than a crutch. It's essential for her. I wonder if you would read a passage from Safety Man.
Sure.
Middle of page 4.
Sandy, too, is functional. Besides Safety Man, there is nothing abnormal about her life. She works like before as a claims adjuster at the IRS. She used to have trouble getting up in the morning, but now she wakes before the alarm. She is showered and dressed before her daughters even begin to stir. She has their cereal in the bowls ready to be doused with milk, their lunches packed, even little loving notes tucked in between bologna sandwiches and juice boxes. She stands at the door as they finish their breakfasts, sipping her coffee, her beige trench coat over her arm. At this very moment, hundreds of women in this exact coat are hurrying down Michigan Avenue. She is no different from them, despite the inflatable man in her tote bag. The girls love Safety Man. Megan is 10 and Molly is 8, and they have decided that Safety Man is handsome. They have been involved in dressing him, their father's old black leather jacket and sunglasses and a baseball cap turned backward. They are pleased to be protected by a life-size simulated male guardian, and when she drops them off at school, they bid him farewell. So long, Jules, they call. They have decided that they would like to have a boyfriend named Jules.
Now, I can see how people would think that a widow using an inflatable doll called Safety Man would be kind of losing her mind, but I don't see it that way. I just think that this is a woman who's desperately trying to cope with what's happened to her.
Well, I think she is losing her mind to the extent that she's playing a role in the world that has nothing to do with what's going on inside her. But I think that coping is a process of sort of losing your mind or separating from your real interior life. And that process is sometimes necessary.
You have a story called Big Me. This is, I must say, very a bizarre story about a little boy. Well, it's told from the point of view of the boy. He's already grown up into a man, but he's remembering back when he was a kid. He lived in this town. A guy moved into this town. And this kid has a very active imagination, and he kind of plays detective in his life. Mm-hmm. And he starts spying on this guy because he somehow has the sense that this guy is a grown-up version of himself.
I don't know whether it's all that bizarre. I mean, I think for a lot of people that I've talked to, and especially writers, tend to connect with this particular kid, because I think that one of the things that happens when people are writers, or even I think almost everybody, has this kind of very vivid fantasy life when they're kids, and it's something that maybe does haunt you later on when you're not allowed to have that vivid fantasy life.
Would you read a passage from Big Me that talks about the guy is remembering what it was like when he was 12 years old, what his life was like, and so it's a reminiscence.
Sure. I first saw the man in what must have been late May. The lilac bush in his front yard was in full bloom, thick with spade-shaped leaves and clusters of perfumed flowers. The man was mowing the lawn as I passed, and I stopped to stare. It immediately struck me that there was something familiar about him. The wavy, dark hair and gloomy eyes, the round face and dimpled chin. At first I thought he looked like someone I'd seen on TV. And then, as I looked at him, I realized he looked like me. Or rather, he looked like an older version of me, grown up. As he got closer with his push lawnmower, I was aware that our eyes were the same odd, pale shade of gray, that we had the same map of freckles across the bridge of our nose, the same stubby fingers. He lifted his hand solemnly as he reached the edge of his lawn, and I lifted my opposite hand so that for a moment we were mirror images of one another. I felt terribly worked up and began to hurry home.
Dan Shaun reading from one of his short stories. This one is called Big Me. I've read where you called your upbringing, quote, possibly a little redneck. You know, but you also, you had these literary ambitions, obviously, from a young age. And this is an amazing story that at age 13, you had the gumption to send off some stories to Ray Bradbury, of all people, the eminent science fiction writer. And he actually wrote you back a letter.
Yes, he did. And he was very encouraging. He's an amazing man. And I have to say that that story, Big Me, could never have been written without Ray Bradbury. It's really kind of a love letter to Ray Bradbury. Yeah, he wrote me back. I sent him stories, and he commented on them, and he encouraged me to become a writer. And I don't think I ever would have had the courage to do it if it hadn't been for him.
Well, he not only encouraged you to become a writer, he encouraged you not to go to college. If I may quote from his letter, he said, "Why are you going to college? If you aren't careful, it will cut across your writing time. Stop your writing stories. Is that what you want? Think. What will you take in college that will help you be a writer? You already have a full style. All you need now is practice at structure." You obviously didn't take his advice in that regard.
No, I didn't.
Dan Shaun, where do some of these story ideas come from? I can't believe that they're all cooked up in your head. I mean, maybe they are, but it sounds like some of them must be prompted by accounts in the news.
News of the weird is very, very important to me. I love unexplained mysteries on TV, and I especially love those books called, True Tales of the Supernatural or whatever. I'm fascinated by the ways in which writing can take you places that you understand only after you've written something. Of course, I like to entertain people, and I like the idea that what I'm writing has some value to other people. That may be just pure entertainment value, or it may be that whatever secrets I'm exploring on my own are also secrets that have an effect on other people, and they may be other people's secrets as well.
Dan Shaun, his new collection of short stories is called Among the Missing. Thank you, Dan Shaun.
Thank you.